know, when I put the uniform on, I'm a Marine, and I don't criticize the President of the United States when I'm a Marine.
Senator Sullivan loses his Marine command because he's in Congress, but he stays in the reserves. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, March 9th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a group of faith leaders brings their message on Medicaid expansion to the Capitol.
We're about honesty, and the reality is Medicaid expansion is an honest need for Alaskans, and religious and faithful people support that.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Crowley, providing marine petroleum distribution and energy support services throughout Alaska since 1953, supporting business development while helping safeguard the environment. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. And by Doyon Limited, announcing the 2015 Board of Directors election, encouraging e-proxy or paper proxy submission no later than Tuesday, March 10th before 5 p.m. Information at doyon.com.
Alaska's Dan Sullivan is one of only two U.S. senators who are current military reservists. His military service as a lieutenant colonel in the Marine Reserves was one of his strongest selling points as a Senate candidate. But now that he's a senator, the Marines have removed him from his assignment as a commander, saying it's incompatible with congressional office. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports on Sullivan's dual roles, officer and senator.
In the Senate Armed Services Committee, other senators and witnesses often commend Sullivan's ongoing military service. It's an extra credential when he denounces President Obama's national security posture, which Sullivan says is too mild.
In his State of the Union, he painted a what I would consider a benign, almost delusional view of the world environment, with quotes like, "The shadow of crisis has passed. We're stopping ISIL's advance. We're opposing Russian aggression. We've halted the progress of Iran's nuclear program." These are all quotes from the president to the American people.
Other Republican senators make similar arguments, but Sullivan can draw on his experience as a reservist for added detail, like when he challenges assertions by the president and others that America is a war-weary nation. Sullivan tells the Armed Services Committee the troops he knows aren't weary.
One of the concerns that they raise, at least with me, and these are just anecdotal, but I'm throwing them out there, is they want to deploy. They join the military to serve their country. They don't want to be sitting around.
Sullivan intends to retain both roles, military officer and senator, but a clause in the U.S. Constitution has proved problematic. It's called the Ineligibility Clause, and it prohibits members of Congress from holding office in the executive branch of government. Whether it applies to reservists is an old dispute, but in December, the Marines cited that bit of the Constitution in a letter telling Sullivan he couldn't keep the commander job he'd had for 18 months. So, in February, Sullivan flew to the West Coast for a ceremony to relinquish command ahead of schedule.
It was a bittersweet change of command for me.
Sullivan was commander of 6th Anglico, a California-based reserves unit, and he loved it. Anglico Marines deploy in small teams, often attaching to foreign allies on the battlefield to coordinate airstrikes. Professor John Harrison of the University of Virginia School of Law is an expert in the ineligibility clause.
Yes, Article 1, Section 6 of the Constitution says that no person holding any office under the United States shall be a member of either house during his continuance in office.
It's a separation of powers thing. Harrison believes the clause bars senators from serving as any kind of officer in the reserves, in a commander role or not.
Well, because as with any military officer, there is an appointment from the president giving that person some role in the government of the United States.
Some argue the infrequency of reserve duty doesn't fit the definition of an executive branch office, so it's okay to be both a Congress member and a reservist. A report from the Congressional Research Service says the question has never been clearly resolved. The Constitution does clearly say Congress is the judge of the qualifications of its members, and Senate historian Don Ritchie says Congress has been fine with simultaneous service.
We have had a history of reservists in the Congress. In fact, there was a reserve unit on Capitol Hill for many years. Barry Goldwater was the commanding officer for it.
Lyndon Johnson was a naval reservist while in the U.S. House and was the first congressman to report for active duty in World War II. Senator Strom Thurmond was promoted to general in the Army Reserves. And these days, his successor, Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, is a JAG in the Air Force Reserves. In Sullivan's case, a Marine spokeswoman cited several laws and policies, along with the Constitution's ineligibility clause, to explain why Sullivan had to give up his assignment as a commander. Sullivan says his understanding was the ineligibility clause was the main reason. The senator says he doesn't have his own take on that part of the Constitution.
I've not looked at it in depth.
But Sullivan says being a reservist makes him more effective in the Senate, in part because he can better press to retain Alaska's military assets.
Having firsthand experience about being able to talk about just how incredible Alaska is for military training, I think gives me a lot of credibility as a senator to make the case to not only my fellow senators, but to senior administration officials.
Sullivan says it's not hard to separate his two roles, one that entails criticizing President Obama, the other requiring that he obey him.
You know, when I put the uniform on, I'm a Marine, and I don't criticize the President of the United States when I'm a Marine. As a U.S. Senator, when I think it warrants it, I can be critical of the administration, but I'm doing it in a way that I think advances our national security.
Sullivan says he's in talks with the Marines now about what his next assignment will be. He's not sure they'll let him be a commander again, but he says he intends to carry on the tradition of serving as a senator and an officer. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Senator Pete Kelly, a Fairbanks Republican, previewed a bill he's planning to introduce this week to reform the current Medicaid system. At a press conference this morning, he said the bill won't include a provision to expand Medicaid. A group of Anchorage religious leaders and laypeople are in Juneau to try to convince him and other skeptical lawmakers to change their minds on the issue. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
Senator Kelly says his Medicaid reform bill will feature health savings accounts. A portion of the permanent fund dividends of Medicaid recipients would go into the accounts to pay for costs that are considered unreasonable.
If you go to an emergency room when you shouldn't have, then that comes out of that health savings account. If you self-refer to a specialist, if you use brand name drugs instead of generic when they're available, those kinds of abuses.
Kelly says the bill will also include a provision for managed care, a system for controlling health costs by managing how patients use health care services. Full details won't be available until the bill is formally introduced later this week. One thing Kelly's bill won't include is Medicaid expansion. He says that may come as a surprise to the Walker administration. Health Commissioner Valerie Davidson did not respond to requests for an interview for this story. Kelly thinks reform has to happen before expansion.
It's a broken system. I think everyone agrees that Medicaid is broken. I think it's been broken for 30 years. Now to expand it, to put more money into it, to bring more people into it, that's certainly not going to help its brokenness.
Kelly will likely encounter a large group of Anchorage residents in Juneau early this week who will try to change his mind. They're from Anchorage Faith and Action Congregations Together, or AFACT, a federation that represents 15 congregations and 10,000 congregants. Reverend Julia Seymour expects their diverse group of 14 representatives to stand out at the Capitol. But she says their message is pretty simple.
We're about honesty, and the reality is Medicaid expansion is an honest need for Alaskans, and religious and faithful people support that.
Reverend Seymour says Medicaid expansion has been a priority for AFACT for at least 3 years. In 2013, the group started publishing a small booklet explaining the complicated issue to congregants. AFACT decided to send representatives to Juneau this session because it's the first time the legislature has seriously considered the issue. Reverend Seymour says they will meet with as many lawmakers as possible on both sides of the aisle.
We're hoping that we will come back from Juneau smarter about this issue, with more knowledge about what's going on in Juneau, with the concerns of both the majority and minority caucuses in our minds, and with a clear understanding of what needs to be done and the ideas that people have to get Medicaid expansion in Alaska.
For Reverend Seymour, approving Medicaid expansion is the moral and ethical decision to make for the state's future.
It's about the health of Alaskans. Healthy Alaskans are productive Alaskans. Productive Alaskans enjoy the gifts of creation, and we have excellent gifts of creation in this state.
At the press conference, Senator Kelly said he doesn't think Medicaid expansion is a moral imperative, but he didn't shut the door completely on the issue either. Kelly said this draft of the bill doesn't include expansion, but talks on whether it or another bill should include it will continue for the rest of the session.
I'm one person with one bill, so I think expansion and reform are discussions that are going on with 60 people in this building, 61 including the governor. My bill just doesn't have expansion in it.
Senator Kelly's Medicaid reform bill is tentatively scheduled to have its first hearing on Friday. Reverend Seymour says when their members return to Anchorage, they'll regroup to consider their next steps and also pray for lawmakers to do their work. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the research ship Sikuliak is commissioned in Seward.
I fully expect that our problem's not going to be lack of work. It's going to be everyone wants to get up there in the same period of time.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
Martin Boozer is leading the Iditarod, the Big Lake musher wearing bib number 4, pulled into the first checkpoint of Nenana a little after 3 this afternoon and checked out 20 minutes later. He was followed by rookie Thomas Wierner from Norway and Michelle Phillips from Canada. This year, dog teams spent an extra day traveling north for a restart in Fairbanks this morning. As Emily Schwing reports, for some teams, the trip to the start line turned into an unwanted adventure.
Many mushers left for Fairbanks directly from Anchorage's Campbell Airstrip following Saturday's ceremonial start. Kirk Pirano, also known as the Kiwi Musher, says the combination of an unreliable dog truck and poor weather had him heading for Fairbanks immediately.
Yeah, we hit a bit of a snowstorm, and then Brent Sass lost his rear wheels, so we helped recover him, hold all his dogs up here to Fairbanks. So a 6-hour trip came like 10.
The wheels fell off the truck, literally. But we made it.
Brent Sass won the Yukon Quest last month. He says a hairy drive up the Parks Highway hasn't dampened his attitude.
I feel great. I'm super stoked to get on the trail, as always. You know, it's been kind of even a bigger build-up now with all the travel after the ceremonial. And the Iditarod's always a bigger build-up than the Yukon Quest anyways. But, yeah, I'm stoked. I can't wait till they say go.
But in the dog lot at the restart, Michelle Phillips was a little nervous. She accidentally locked her parka, warm clothes, and other gear in her truck, along with the keys.
Yeah, Murphy's Law.
Phillips from Tagish, Yukon, tried to laugh it off as she waited for a locksmith to arrive. It took a few minutes, but once the truck was open, she was able to concentrate. Her goal is a top 10 finish this year.
You never know till you get out there and you see what the race holds for you, you know. I'm just going to try to stick to my schedule, do my plan, and see where that takes me.
Nearby, longtime Iditarod musher Ray Reddington Jr. was scrambling. His dog truck wouldn't start because it wasn't plugged in overnight. He didn't comment, but did find a way to make it down the trail among 78 other teams who will race for Nome over the next 2 weeks. On the Iditarod Trail, I'm Emily Schwing in Fairbanks.
Omni Enterprises is shutting down their large Swanson's grocery store in Bethel. The store occupies a brand new building and is the only competitor for the Alaska Commercial Store there. KYUK's Ben Matheson reports.
A line of customers with overflowing shopping carts stretches to the back of the store. With no parking spots left and no shopping carts remaining, Bethel resident Tiffany Tony had to borrow a long stainless steel cart from the butcher to load up on groceries.
Everything's 50% off, and that's kind of a scary good deal.
Dan LaRue's cart was filled to the brim.
Oh, just ice cream, bread, soap, rice, bacon, meat, candy.
One cashier says she's checked out people who spent $2,700. The store will officially close Friday. Grocery manager Steve Kenyon was loading box after box of food.
If it stays like this, it's definitely, it might not last till the end of the day.
Kenyon says he'll move back to Anchorage because of the closure.
My reaction? Sucks.
Did you know this was coming?
We had some inclinations, but, you know, not until the last month or so.
With the shutdown comes the loss of two incomes for 26-year-old Donald Roberts and his girlfriend. He worked 17 hours per week and his girlfriend 32 to support their two-month-old son. He's beginning to think about a plan.
Find another job? So, yeah, we're screwed, pretty much.
He says for now, his brother, who's also his roommate, will have to cover the $2,000 in rent they owe each month. About 80 employees work at the store, a mix of full-time and part-time staff. Swanson's is a business of Omni Enterprises. The company is employee-owned and has stores in Dillingham, Togiak, Glen Allen, and Big Lake. Store manager Casey Cruz says the company is handing the facility back to the owner, the Bethel Native Corporation. He received a letter from his bosses at 9:30 Monday morning. He then called a meeting with his department heads to give them the news.
Well, we're just doing what we do, and that's all we can do. We can't do anything. I mean, it's a corporate decision.
Cruz has been with Omni for about 9 years. Customer Colleen Ferguson lamented the loss of the store.
Well, this one's been in Bethel for years and years, and it's, you know, I knew it when the Swanson's brothers used to be here, so it's really sad to see it going.
The closure comes less than a year after the store moved into a brand new $20 million building owned by the Bethel Native Corporation. Omni's corporate offices had no comment. Employees at their hardware store and quick food store said they had no plans to close. The city of Bethel relies heavily on sales tax from places like Swanson's to cover operations. Councilmember Mark Springer was among the noontime crowd.
This will be a hit. This is lost revenue because I don't think every dollar that would have been spent here is going to continue to be spent in Bethel. There's too many alternatives on the internet.
A spokesperson for the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development, Heather Beatty, says the state is sending a rapid response team to Bethel.
To help the affected workers access their unemployment benefits, to do skills assessments, and provide extra assistance with job seeking.
BNC President and CEO Anna Hoffman said she had no comment about the future of the Swanson space, but said by email that the movie theater, which is also housed in the building and owned by BNC, will remain open. In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
One of Petersburg's seafood processors is trying to make a go at shrimp. Tonka Seafoods is starting small to see if the market is there for their limited operation. As KFSK's Angela Denning reports, they should have their answer in a few weeks.
Shrimping used to be a robust industry in Petersburg. The state's first shrimp plant started here in 1916. But the market ceased being profitable, and the last plant closed down 10 years ago. Still, co-owner of the local seafood processor Tonka Seafoods, Seth Scrimshire, says the product is special.
There are very few cold water shrimp left in the world. It's mostly warm water shrimp or farm shrimp. And the cold water shrimp is known for a sweeter flavor.
We're talking about pink shrimps, the tiny ones found on salads. Tonka Seafoods is a locally owned business located just outside of downtown Petersburg, and they think they may have found a new shrimp market involving Iceland and England.
We need to see if we can freeze them fast enough and maintain the quality and ship it to the buyer as cheaply as possible to work under their budget constraints.
Tonka can freeze up to 30,000 pounds of shrimp within 24 hours, but this winter was about testing. They froze smaller batches totaling 250,000 pounds. Those shrimp are en route to Iceland, where they will be cooked and peeled and then sent on to markets in England.
Iceland has a tremendous amount of quota for these pink shrimp, but it's been steadily declining, which is why they're looking over here to replace some of that.
That means competing against Iceland's at-sea processors, who freeze the shrimp at sea. Tonka's process starts at the back dock of the plant, located along the Wrangell Narrows, so boats can drive up and unload their catches. I follow Scrimshire into the first room off the dock.
The shrimp comes in here would get dumped on that table where the initial sorting and distribution to the belt begins.
As the shrimp travel along a large white conveyor belt, they are rinsed and sorted by about a half dozen workers called graders.
And they'll pick out the seaweed, pieces of broken shrimp, and pick out the side stripes. And so we're just running clean pink shrimps.
The shrimp get frozen in 22-pound blocks in the freezing area. There are two huge storage freezers that keep the shrimp frozen before shipping. Tonka should know by mid-March if this whole process will work out with the international markets. And if it does?
Then we would try to add a few more fishermen to try to catch the and process the entire guideline harvest amount.
That's about 3 million pounds of shrimp near Petersburg. On a busy day, that would mean employing 18 people working shrimp at the plant. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The 2015 PFD filing season is here. If you have questions about your absences or someone you know away at college or serving in the military, the State of Alaska Department of Revenue encourages you to be proactive. Check out the absence guidelines before applying for your PFD. Visit pfd.alaska.gov and click on eligibility in the banner to learn more. The deadline to apply is March 31st. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
ANSEP, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, gives Alaska Native students the inspiration and opportunity to excel in science and engineering careers, building a sustainable future for Alaska. More at ANSEP.net. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
The research vessel Sikuliak was officially commissioned Saturday in a ceremony at the boat's home port in Seward. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Early on in the ceremony, Inupiat Elder Dolores Burnell of Barrow gave an invocation in both English and the native tongue.
Receive into your protection all those who go down to the sea in the research vessel Sikuliak and occupy their business in the advancements of science on the great waters of the globe.
Matt Hawkins, project manager with the National Science Foundation, which owns the one-of-a-kind vessel, says its advanced technology and capabilities will provide researchers with the sort of platform they need to understand more about the dynamics of climate, as well as numerous other kinds of scientific inquiry.
Please remember that our scientists would be incapable of conducting their valuable work without technologically advanced and highly capable infrastructure behind them. And that, of course, is represented in Sikuliak.
Dan Oliver is director of the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences Seward Marine Center, and he's one of the driving forces behind the Sikuliak. Oliver says many research projects are planned to study the ocean from many scientific perspectives, from the biology of the life within to the geology of its floor to the atmospheric science of the air above. He says much of that research will be coordinated with such world-class organizations as the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute and the Scripps Research Institute. So Oliver expects the Sikuliak and its crew will stay busy.
You know, as we do more research and the reputation of the ship and its capabilities gets further and further out within the science community, I fully expect that, our problem's not going to be lack of work. It's going to be everyone wants to get up there in the same period of time.
The research can begin now that the Sikuliak has been officially commissioned in a ceremony before about 375 guests that was concluded jointly by Hawkins and Oliver.
On behalf of the National Science Foundation
and the University of Alaska Fairbanks,
we hereby commission the research vessel Sikuliak
as a member of the U.S. Academic Research Fleet.
Thank you.
In Seward, I'm Tim Ellis.
Ideas for helping homeless individuals was the topic of a gathering in Anchorage over the weekend. One idea was simple: treat people who experience homelessness like every other member of the community. KSKA's Ann Hillman attended.
The three-hour-long conference was a brainstorming session that brought together social service agencies, people who have experienced homelessness, and others who are concerned about the issue. People teleconferenced in from Nome, Juneau, and Kodiak as well. UAA anthropology professor Sally Karahar helped coordinate the event. She says the idea was to look at homelessness from many different perspectives and together think of possible solutions.
So we want to do a network that connects services and agencies and organizations and real people and the public And connects them so that we're all speaking a shared language.
The group includes people from northern Canada and throughout Alaska as well. Karahar says one thing that makes homelessness unique in the north is the sense that everyone should take care of themselves.
And on the one hand, I think that resiliency and that strength is actually really awesome about Alaska and northern Canada and northerners in general. But I think it is also kind of a barrier when trying to think about a problem like homelessness, which is increasing and increasing, and it's you can't expect individuals to each be able to pull themselves out of this problem.
So the community needs to remember that homelessness is just a circumstance and could happen to anyone. That's according to Kaya Wolf, who lived in shelters as a child and has couch surfed as an adult.
These are people on the streets. They're not scenery. They are human beings, and I want to talk about their successes. I want to talk about their struggles, and I want to talk about hope for the future.
Wolf and other attendees spoke about reducing the stigma attached to being homeless so that people can more openly seek help. Robert Alexi is a resident of Carlick Manor, Anchorage's Housing First facility. He says that social service agencies and the public need to stop seeing people who experience homelessness as statistics and instead see them as humans who need encouragement.
You know, if you want to say anything to somebody, hey, go up to Carlick Manor, use the resources. A lot of people don't want to use the resources.
Alexi says not using resources is often an issue of pride, but being directed to Carlick Manor is what saved him and his health. He says the staff at Carlick sought him out for housing and helped connect him to medical services.
After almost 20 years on crutches, I'm walking without them, and it's nice. That's what Carlick gave me, and there was no way I could repay them. There's no way.
More than 50 people attended the conference. Conference coordinators say this is only the beginning of the conversation. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Emily Schwing in Fairbanks, Ben Matheson in Bethel, Angela Denning in Petersburg, Tim Ellis in Seward, and Ann Hillman in Anchorage. APRN's Liz Ruskin reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Pat Yak is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer in the United States, but it doesn't have to be. Colorectal cancer screening can prevent cancer by removing polyps before they turn into cancer. Screening can also find this cancer early when treatment works best. So if you're 50 or older, talk with your doctor about which screening test is right for you. More at alaskacolonhealth.org. This message sponsored by Ride for Life. The School of Management at the University of Alaska Southeast is open for business with courses in accounting, information systems, and public administration. Degree programs and courses available online. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by University of Alaska Southeast.
Support for APRN Iditarod coverage comes from Wells Fargo, proud supporter of the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the trail. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.